friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Happy Thursday, Stephen.
Thanks, Phil. How are you tonight?
Well, I am super fantastic. I'm very excited because, you know, we've gone to this two-show format just because of the holidays and some other things that were going on. But, you know, a couple things we managed to keep real, okay? We've kept the amazing thing going, right? That's important. And the other thing is, on Fridays every week, when we're doing three shows a week, we always do Other Geek. Well, we didn't really do Other Geek last week, so we kind of missed it a little bit. But this week we're going to make up for it because we're doing a little something I like to call Total Geek. Am I right?
Just a total geek out for the entire show. That's all right.
That's right. That we're just going to geek out. So I hope you're all ready. This is I've described this as stories for geeks by geeks. So you know, and I guess we all know who we are here. But we got one on real aliens, one on fake Star Trek, and then one on some interesting Hobbit stuff going on there too, under the category of other geeky goodness. So gosh, let's just jump right into it. Well, you know, Stephen, if it's in the New York Times, right, you can pretty much believe it. Am I right?
Well, it's certainly the pinnacle of, you know, normal news, right? I mean, if
traditional media, absolutely.
Yeah, it's the spot that so many other newspapers take their cue from, as well as broadcast. I mean, it is the fountainhead for a lot of interesting news. And so
the weekly world
this,
news, it ain't, okay? You know what I'm saying?
It is not. It is not that at all. And
this
so
is the real thing, 'cause when they tell you that there's such thing as aliens, that's one thing. But now we've got the New York Times saying, and here's the headline, yes, there have been aliens. It's what it says.
I think, okay, we got a clickbait article and it's going to talk about the Drake equation. And as you know, you can plug any numbers you like into the Drake equation. How in the world can you say definitively that, yes, there have been aliens when, you know, you're basically just using the Drake equation here yet again? Well, we know some things now.
And I
got to
say, Stephen, you must have been a little wary as you started reading, because they start with the Drake equation, right? I mean, they go right into
That's right.
And the first thing they point out is, well, at least we do have some solid numbers to plug in now, right?
Yeah, I guess we should tell.
Guys like us first heard about the Drake equation, we didn't know how many planets there were, right? That was just wild.
Yeah. Well, we should say what the Drake equation is, okay?
Right,
it is an equation that is really more of purpose of generating discussion than it is an equation like, as the article says, it's not E equals MC squared like, that.
Right.
It's always been for, here's what we need to know in order to really determine how many, civilizations there are in the galaxy. And so it gives all these various variables. And I think it's a pretty good equation. It's just the problem's always been that we don't know the answers to too many of those variables, right?
Exactly.
And so
the problem has always been, from the get-go, we're just making it all up, right? So the first thing they say in this article is, well, now we're not making it all up anymore, right? Now we've got a lot more data points than we did before. But then they do something really interesting with the – because even then, it's still all just supposition, right? You look at it and you say, well, it's still – okay, so now we know there's a planet everywhere. But I still don't see how that gets you to life. But it does. How does this get you to life, Stephen? It's very clever what they do here.
Okay. Well, they changed they basically changed the question, didn't they?
Right.
It's the question now is, has there ever been in the history of our galaxy a civilization? And they say, yeah, it would appear that based on what we now know, you would have to almost enter the realm of the irrational to think that there hasn't been at least some other civilizations in the history of our galaxy. I'm going to get to where I can actually read this. Phil, are you at that spot?
Yeah. What's really amazing is I want to tweak what you said just slightly, because it's not exactly the question of have there ever been. It's if you really want the convincing number, the question to ask is, okay, what are the odds that there have never been? Right. That's the one that gets you there. Unless the probability for evolving a civilization on a habitable zone planet is less than 1 in 10 billion trillion, then we are not the first. Okay? So the odds against there having never been another one are just unspeakably, unimaginably vast. It still doesn't prove, it's still not... It's still, yes, there were probably aliens. Not, yes, there definitely were aliens. But, I'll give them a pass on that headline, and I'm very critical of headlines most of the time. It says, in science, an important step forward can be finding a question that can be answered with the data at hand. Our paper did just this. As for the big question, whether any other civilizations currently exist, we may have to wait a long while for relevant data. But we should not underestimate how far we have come in a short time. And, I don't have the quote in front of me, but they do in fact say that essentially you're approaching being irrational to suggest that something that the odds against were 1 in 10 billion trillion has occurred. That's the chances that we're the first ever and only civilization in the galaxy. That means, there are aliens, or there have been aliens. I think it's an elegant proof, and I don't know. That is as convincing an argument as I've ever seen on this subject, I think.
Right. So let me just read that. I want to read that quote. I think that's important. In other words, given what we now know about the number and orbital positions of the galaxy's planets, the degree of pessimism required to doubt the existence at some point in time of an advanced extraterrestrial civilization borders on the irrational. This is coming from, mainstream science being published in a very mainstream newspaper.
The New York Times, that's right.
Yeah, and so, I don't have any reason to argue with this. It seems like this is they probably got it right. Now, the question is, at this moment in time, are we alone? That's a bigger question. We don't have an answer to that still. But... It's a relatively old galaxy, and it's a big galaxy. And so, have there ever been other civilizations? Almost certainly yes. Almost certainly yes. And that's kind of big news.
Well, it is, because let's think about the implications of that. The implications of that are, one, this is a good argument for looking. Right, looking for evidence of civilizations that are out there now, or for the remnants of civilizations, because that is, those who take this subject seriously and talk about it, that's one of the things they say is, it's possible that you don't get a lot of them overlapping, right? Especially within the same galaxy, it's entirely possible that we're the only one in this galaxy right now. Although it's possible that there's 100,000 others or a million others in this galaxy right now. We really don't know, but it's possible that, the life of the universe being so much longer than we can really wrap our heads around, that a whole civilization, can be born and have a long maturity and exist for a long time and then finally peter out for whatever reason, or ascend, or whatever it is that happens to them, destroy themselves, who knows what kinds of interesting story arcs they get on. And it covers the course of a million or 5 million or even 10 million years. And even that chunk of time is just kind of a blip, right? When you compare it to the history of the universe, and we've only been around, as a civilization for a few thousand years, right? Which is nothing, right? If civilizations only last in the thousands of years, then it really would be unlikely that you're necessarily going to overlap with another one. The chances of occurring at the same time another one become fairly remote at that point.
This article and the implications of it remind me of my favorite Star Trek episode, from the next generation is Inner Light. I believe we've discussed it even recently, Phil.
Yep.
That's the episode that Picard is a probe. The Enterprise encounters a probe, and it's a mysterious probe. They don't know where it's from, and it appears to attack Picard, and Picard wakes up on some alien world and doesn't know what's going on, and it's a world that's in danger and trouble, and he spends a lifetime there, you know, figuring out what's going on and everything, and I hate to give too much away, but it's an old episode, and I promise you it's still worth your while, even if what this is a spoiler. He learns that eventually that this lifetime that he lives on this planet is part of what the probe is giving him, so that it can be remembered. It's a civilization that wishes to be remembered that has become extinct.
A long time ago, they went extinct, and they sent this probe out to tell other people about them. Yeah. Now, when I say we should be looking for remnants of civilizations, stuff like that would be hard to find, clearly.
Yeah.
But it's that idea. Exactly. It's that idea that they knew, in this case, they knew they were on the way out. There was nothing they could do to stop it. And so they at least left this kind of, almost kind of a message in a bottle of who they were. That plays out in that, I agree, absolutely beautiful Star Trek episode. And you're right, that is the idea. If, of course, in Star Trek, and we'll be talking about Star Trek in just a few minutes, because this is Total Geek, and how could we have a Total Geek show without talking about Star Trek? But in the Star Trek universe, there's all these civilizations occurring simultaneously. And yet here was this one that was long gone. It was kind of a beautiful...
bittersweet.
Poignant, image of how the galaxy works, and probably more realistic version of how the galaxy works, probably a more realistic depiction of how the galaxy works. So as we're looking for extraterrestrial civilizations, we're as likely to find one from the past, if not more likely to find one from the past, than we are to find one currently happening. So including, if you recall, the those mysterious structures out there that have that are circling that, orbiting that one star that we've done a couple of shows talking about. It's entirely possible that that is a remnant of a previous civilization rather than actually being a vibrant, happening civilization, especially since what we're seeing there happened some time ago, right?
Right, right. It could be old news and that civilization long gone. So, that's a fascinating, great article. Great article.
Everybody should read that. I think if you're on the fence, as I have been, as to whether we should really, accept that there might be other, I've always thought there might be, but really say for sure, to say, there probably are. It makes sense to say that there are. This kind of makes that argument for you. If you weren't quite sure where to stand on that, I think this argument is hard to dispute. I think it resonates and it adds up, and it gets us that much farther. Because once you got a universe with aliens in it, Stephen, anything can happen, right? I don't know. Have you been to see the new Independence Day yet? I'm just saying.
Not yet. I've heard mixed reviews. I'm sorry to say. I'd hoped that it would be one that everybody would love, but apparently not.
Well, as soon as I heard that there was no Will Smith, I was not all that excited about going to see it.
He was a big reason that that original film was so good.
And the chemistry between him and Jeff Goldblum, that kind of made the movie, actually, I thought. But we digress. The point is, it's a big universe out there, and maybe we're not alone, or maybe we're not quite as unique as we thought we are. Okay, that's one geek topic. Now let's get serious, Stephen, and let's talk some Star Trek. What do you say?
of course.
So all right, this, I'm going to go out on a big limb here. All right, I'm going to take a stand on something.
Okay.
Have you seen these new Star Trek fan production guidelines? Have you read about this?
I have, and I enjoy these fan made Star Trek films, and new episodes of, and I love it when they can sometimes get some of the original actors back. It's these things are pretty sophisticated things sometimes, and sometimes very well written. And I like these fan episodes, and I want there to be more of it, not less. And it seems that Paramount is intent on reining in some of this stuff.
You know what they're doing is they're going into full rent-seeking mode, the full litigation happy mode, and really missing the point. Really missing the point of what they own. I think they don't grasp that Paramount is not making all of the money that it makes off the right to use the name Star Trek or the right to license the characters Captain Kirk and the Starship Enterprise and all that stuff. You know, they're making money off the fact that that is a cultural phenomenon, right? That people have bought into now for decades. That's like an important part of their lives. It's a community, right? It's not just we own this thing, so we're going to lease it. And you know, I'm a very capitalist-minded individual, so I'm not saying that because everybody loves it, it should be free, and anybody who wants to do anything they want, you know, should be allowed to. It definitely would be a conflict if these people making these fan episodes were, you know, releasing their movies the same weekend as a Star Trek movie comes out, showing in the same cineplexes and charging money for them and making money off it. I mean, that would be one thing, right? That would be
right.
An issue, and they would be perfectly within their rights to take this kind of hard line. These fans do this for one reason and one reason only. It's because they love Star Trek, right? My whole life, fans have loved Star Trek, and they've done as much Star Trek as they could. You know, when I was younger, they would write fiction, right? And they still do. I mean, there's tons of fan fiction written around the Star Trek universe, and they would publish, you know, their...
And some of it's pretty good. You know,
it's pretty good. A lot of it's really horrible. But the point is, this is a participatory universe. You don't want to make it non-participatory, right? So they make these rules where they say the fan production must not exceed 30 minutes total, with no additional seasons, episodes, parts, sequels, or remakes. That is a dumb rule. I mean, what they're afraid of is that somehow the franchise, you know, it's they're afraid. They own the franchise, right? No one else can have anything that looks or feels like the franchise. And it's just wrong. They don't understand that every one of these fan series, every one of these fan movies promotes their stuff, right? It's free advertising. It's advertising that people spend their money and their time, right, and put their heart and soul into providing for them. And to not get that is just sad. It's sad that you could own Star Trek and have seen what's happened with it for all these years and not get it, to be that clueless. And to have these new guidelines come out a few weeks before the new Star Trek movie is released, I'm kind of astounded that they're that clumsy and heavy-handed, and I'm just going to say kind of dumb about the whole thing. I mean,
here's my thought. I think that it's quite possible that this fan-made movie, Axanar, is going to be better Star Trek than the Star Trek movie that's coming out this summer. I think there's a fair chance of that.
Right.
And they're trying to, protect their turf. I understand that desire to protect your turf. But make good Star Trek. If you're going to protect your turf, protect it from bad Star Trek, and while you produce good Star Trek. I hate to be a pessimist, but I just don't get a good feeling about this movie that's about to come out.
Well, not only is it conflicting with this new movie, Axanar, which looks really cool. I've provided a link to the Wikipedia page that just has all the Star Trek fan productions, and I was actually amazed how many series there are. I didn't realize because the two.
Oh yeah, I've been watching this stuff, Phil. It's great. Some of it's bad, but I'm going to tell you, it's remarkable how much of it's good.
Yeah, well, if you watch Phase 2, and if you watch Star Trek Continues, those are the two I strongly recommend, right? I mean, the rest of them, there's good moments and bad moments, and I'm not saying that they're all worthwhile to an extent. I mean, they're all just amazing to watch. But those are the two, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, those are the two that occasionally even involve actors from the previous series, right? Star Trek Phase Two, they've done episodes that have had George Takei. They've done episodes that have had Walter Koenig on them. I was watching Star Trek Continues, and, I mean, they just do wonderful stuff. They do a sequel to the Apollo episode. Remember the Apollo episode? And they bring that actor
And that
back.
Was great.
Yeah, oh, that was a really good episode. And the great thing about Star Trek Continues is, you know, not only have they reproduced the sets and the costumes and the music and the look, they even put it in the same format so it looks like a TV show from the 60s, and they followed the exact, you know, four-act structure that was required for a TV show in the 60s. So, I mean, it is in every way that series, right? I mean, these are like additional episodes of TOS. These are original episodes of Star Trek, the original series.
And that Apollo sequel had the original actors.
Yeah.
Had the original Apollo came back as a much older man, obviously.
Yeah.
But that was
and
that
part
was
of the story
that
was
explained.
With how
that was explained.
And,
yeah.
And it's really cool. And I don't know if have you seen the one where they go to the mirror universe?
Yes.
Okay. There's a sequel to the Spock Has a Goatee episode, the Mirror Universe, and I thought it was fantastic. That was actually the first one I watched, and I was completely blown away by that. And I don't want to take anything away from Star Trek Phase Two, but Star Trek Continues to me is just like it's such a treat because it's like you really feel like you're getting an episode. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, here's an episode of Star Trek I've never seen. It's not quite perfect. The guy looks a lot like Shatner, right? Which really kind of helps create the illusion. He doesn't sound that much like him, but I mean, they've even gone so far as Scotty is played by Chris Doohan, James Doohan's son, right? Is playing Scotty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Scotty's son is playing Scotty. That's amazing to me. And I look at that and I go, you know what? I think Paramount needs to clean up their act. And if they don't walk these limitations back on fan productions, I think I'm just going to enjoy these shows on this Wikipedia page for the near term. I don't think I'm going to go see the new Star Trek movie, and I'm not even sure I'll watch the new Star Trek the new Star Trek series on CBS. I think I'll just enjoy fan fiction for a while until.
I don't know. I think I'm going. I'm not up for the movie this summer, but I'm definitely up for the. The show this fall, it is. It intrigues me. What they're going to do is an anthology series. It's not going to be like one spaceship with one cast. It'll be this week we're seeing, you know, Enterprise F, you know, in the far future from Picard, even, and some crisis that they're dealing with. And next week we're back in Kirk's time on a different vessel, and you know, with this particular crew doing this thing and that. And to me, that just opens up the entire Star Trek universe, and I'm excited
wonderful.
To see what they do with that.
But again, if they don't ease up on these other shows, I'm not watching that one. That's my
well, you know, in some ways, you know, it in some ways, it's like they're trying to incorporate the idea of what these other shows are giving us.
Well, and that's what they should really do. You know, the only rule they need to make is that they own distribution rights, right? If anybody's ever going to make any money off it, they have to be the channel by which it happens.
Right.
Problem solved, right? That would take care of it right there. Instead of trying.
And if Paramount watches your Star Trek episode and it's not any good,
then they will simply choose not to distribute it. That's right.
Right, right. And you know, you can put it out on the internet and for free. But if you're going to charge, it's got to go through them. I like that idea.
That would be the solution. If they were smart, that's what they would do. I hope they will do something like that. And meanwhile, until they back off, until they say these other shows are okay, I don't know that I'm watching any new Star Trek. Okay, hey, we're almost out of time, and we've got one more. You want to talk about Total Geek story to tell. Let's hear it, Stephen. What's going on around the Gordon household?
Okay, so we were watching... week or so ago, we were watching again the Hobbit trilogy. Now, we're bigger fans of the Lord of the Rings. We find
everybody
that it's a
is.
It's
anybody
everybody.
Who likes the Hobbit better isn't somebody you need to mess with, right?
Yeah, and so, but there's we find that there's a lot to like about the Hobbit though, and those three movies. And as we were sitting there and just discussing it, Matthew said, you know, the problem, I said, what's the problem with it? He says, the problem is one of excess. There's a complete lack of restraint on the part of the storyteller here. They're just going all over the place, chasing this rabbit and that rabbit, when the actual story as found in the book, if they had limited themselves to that and produced one movie, make it a long movie perhaps, but one movie, and it would have been a beloved movie. Everybody would have thought it was great, and it would have been considered a co-equal, maybe the kid brother to the Lord of the Rings and a proper send-off.
It would have had the same relationship to the film series, The Lord of the Rings, that the book, The Hobbit, has to the trilogy, The Hobbit, right?
Right.
It would have been the same thing. That's exactly what they should have done. So what's going to happen? What's the plan?
Okay, so Matthew says, you know what? I've got the tools and the skill and everything. I'm going to just take these three movies and I'm going to make a fan cut. I said, really? What you got in mind? He says, I think I can produce out of all of this stuff. I can make a 3-hour movie that would be so much superior to the almost, you know, it's if you look at the extended cuts of all three of those movies, you're talking like somewhere probably between 7 and 9 hours, right?
Right.
And he says, I can make a 3-hour movie that would be fantastic. The middle movie is probably the one he would end up cutting the most from. He might only take 30 to 45 minutes from the middle movie and maybe an hour 15 from the first movie and then an hour or so from the last movie and put it all together and get something in the neighborhood of about 3 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours is the goal. And as we were sitting there, you know, he decided that's what he's going to do. He's sitting there watching, goes, oh, that's gone. I'm cutting this. This is out. And as he was listening to the credits at the end of the first movie, he said, "Oh, this song has to stay, but of course I can't run credits in the middle of my cut. So I've got to figure out a way to bring this beautiful song here at the end of the first movie into a battle scene." And so he's thinking about I think what he will ultimately produce, you know, give him 6 months. It's going to take a little time to get it to polish it the way he wants to. It might be something that Phil, I think that you would enjoy, and I know that I will.
That sounds great. I challenge him though. I challenge him to get it under 2 hours or two.
Get it under
two.
Okay.
Make a 2-hour right. movie. I bet you. Remember the original animated The Hobbit?
Yeah, I do.
Rankin Bassett. Yeah. That's a good movie. I mean, it covered most of the ground that The Hobbit needs to cover, and it was like 90 minutes, right? I think I love this whole idea. I got to say, we were talking just the other night about, you know, in the Declaration of Singularity about this incredible influx of capability that people can do things they couldn't before. You know, you and I can do a podcast. It's great. Star Trek fans can make their own Star Trek series that's essentially identical to the original series. And here, one kid, if he wants to, can recut a movie and make it better, right?
Remove
the
excess.
I already like this version better, okay, than Peter Jackson's trilogy. So yeah, let's encourage him. You know, if he's going to do a Kickstarter or whatever, we'll get him on the show if he needs help. Promote, but actually, he's probably got everything he needs to do.
He's got everything he needs. He's got a full setup. I mean, he's good to go. So he's just going to start the project. And of course, and here's the thing. You know, like fan made cuts should be. They're released, of course, without any charge being made because he doesn't own any of this stuff. But
he's just doing it because he likes it. Same as
he doesn't. He's doing it because he likes it, and he wants to see this cut. You know,
exactly.
He thinks that the world will be a better place with this cut of the movie in existence.
Well, so. I think it will too. So keep us posted on that, Stephen. I look forward to seeing that. And that is some good geek stuff to end our week on. That's fantastic. All right, listen, we're going to be back again next week. We're going to be back to the 3-show format, God willing, next week. Great geeking out with you tonight, Stephen. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see it.